Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission every week is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs and fascinating business people that I can find who are really excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and actionable advice, and often their backstory. That backstory is so important, and they share that with us very openly each week. And today I welcome back to the show my friend, the fulfiller of publishing dreams, Stacy Aronson, for part five of an extended conversation we've been having about independent book publishing. Now, in our first interview, we talked about how the self-publishing model can help or hurt your book sales. In the second one, we discussed why do-it-yourself, DIY, and self-publishing are not one and the same, not even close as it turns out. In part three, we delved into the different types of editing and the importance of each, and how editors differ and what to look for, what questions you should ask yourself before interviewing professionals to determine what your particular needs are, what your concerns, your wishes, and goals for your book are. This is so, so important, and I really hope you'll listen to these past interviews because it's all part of the greater whole. And in part four, we discovered interviewing editors, the red flags that you really need to heed, and why it's so important to find the right editor for you as a writer. So as I mentioned, please do listen to segments one through four so that you can have access to all of the information that Stacy is sharing with us. I have to tell you, she has given us an amazing amount of information. It's just astonishing. And she has freely shared it, and she's done it with joy and grace, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. So to round out this important series today, and we may not round it out today, we may have to go to a sixth one, but we won't know until the end of the hour. You don't want to miss this if you're considering writing or self-publishing a book. And the book doctor, Stacy, is back again to chat about the importance of finding the right designers to bring your baby to fruition. And you want your cover to be excellent from the front to the spine to the back to the interior. That's what sells your book. I can't tell you how many times I've picked up a book and the title might have grabbed me, but the cover was so garish or so out of tune with what I thought the book was about that I would just put it right back down. It's an emotional experience. So Stacy is going to share what questions to ask both cover designers and layout artists along with those red flags to heed. And then she's going to finish up with a list of great resources for finding book professionals. Stacy, I'm so excited to have you back. Welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Thank you so much for the lovely introduction. Once again, I feel so at home here on your show, so thank you.
I know.
For having me back.
It's like we need to go out to lunch after it's over. I mean, we just have so much fun with it. Listen, we were chatting in the green. We were chatting in the green room before the show went live, and you have got some big congratulations in order. Do you mind sharing what we were talking about in the green room before the show went live?
Oh, I'm so proud of the authors I work with. I feel like the mama bear or the mother whose child just got into college or something. I have so much pride in the books I work on with my authors. And as I was telling you, two books published this week, two books that I've been working on with my authors since May, both of whom had very hard launch dates for specific reasons. And so making sure that that happened, of course, was extremely important. But I'm just so proud of them. One is called Until the Brighter Tomorrow, One Woman's Courageous Climb from the Projects to the Podium. And that's by Valerie Rainford. And it's an incredibly inspiring story. If anybody thinks they're down and out and, have had struggles, this book will just put things in perspective and help you see that even in the worst of circumstances, you can overcome, you can become successful, you can forge your own path. And that's what Valerie did. She literally climbed from the projects with every kind of challenge stacked up against her to become a senior executive in a very prominent financial organization and an incredible mentor. So I'm very, very excited about this book, and there's a lot of buzz around it, and I'm super excited. The other one is also a memoir, and it's called Three Miracles and a Near-Death Experience, about this charming and wonderful man who never, ever thought he could tell his very painful story, but also very inspiring and wonderful spiritual journey to anybody. And when he started sharing it, he realized how many people were touched and affected. And so I got to work on that book with him, and that came out this week as well. And that's by Lee Breitkreutz. And so anyway, those are my little pitches. See, I get to pitch because they're not my books. So I'm not the author, so I'm not selling myself. Well, but thank you for letting me do that.
Oh, I think it's such an achievement. I mean, look, I know what launches are like. So when you told me you had two, I just went, wow, that's pretty impressive. And just so the audience knows, I have read a pre-publication copy of Valerie's book. You and Valerie sent it to me. It's a fantastic book. I mean, it will make you sit. It will make you weep. It will make you go, holy God. And then you go, oh. I mean, it's inspiring. It's frightening. It's heartbreaking. It's a wonderful book.
Yes, it's incredibly inspiring, and you know, she's been mentoring women for quite some time, and really made a difference in not just in women's lives, but young men's lives, teenagers' mm-hmm. lives, all kinds of lives. And so, this book really has a potential to help so many people see through to the light, which so many people need at different times in their lives, no matter where you come from. It's a really powerful message. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. As I said, I feel like the mama bear. I'm so proud of my authors. Like I'm the mama, which is kind of funny.
Well,
I know,
yeah.
But that's how I am with my book clients.
Well, I mean, you're helping them kind of bring it to birth, aren't you? I mean, it's almost like a birth. It's coming from their soul and out onto paper, especially
the
memoir.
It is absolutely a birth. Yes, yes,
yeah.
And I often say that, you know, the baby's being born this week.
Right.
You know, are you so excited? So, yes, it's definitely like that. There's, you know, usually a 4 to 6 month gestation period
right.
where we're working together, and then out it comes to the world. So it's very exciting. So thank you so much for letting me share those with everybody today.
Congratulations to you and your authors. I mean, I think that's a remarkable achievement for all three of you. And I can't wait to see how it, you know, how they do with these books. I mean, books are important. You know me, books are important. Listen, we've got a ton to talk about, but I wanted to make sure that people understood that you had these great books coming out. So, and I'll get you to tell people where they can find them after a bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay, great. Okay, so this show is all about you because you've got so much to share. I don't even know what questions to ask you at this point. And I know that you're on track with this interview series because you have so much to share. So I am just going to turn over the mic to you and let you run with it.
Well, alrighty then. And please chime in because you always have so much great input. And I love the questions you ask. And I love when you share your own experiences with the audience. I think it just, you know, really enhances the interview, of course. But
well, half the time I'm sitting here with my hand going, me, I have a question, me. Like a kid in school.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
Since you're in charge, of course, you know, chime in whenever you want to.
Okay,
but,
I will.
We've obviously talked about cover design more than just right now. I mean, we've talked about it in different episodes of the podcast, and we talked about how, you know, the cliche, you can't judge a book by its cover, but guess what? Yes, we do. And
I do.
That is just human nature. And the thing is when you land on Amazon and you punch in your keywords or whatever and you're searching, that thumbnail image is going to grab you or it's not. Sometimes it's the title that grabs you, but usually it's an image because we're very image drawn. We're very image motivated, and that's why Pinterest is so much fun for people. People love to see images, and why infographics are so powerful, because people love images. So when you think about a cover, especially when you're self-publishing, it's so important. Like we talked about in the DIY is not the same as self-publishing. it doesn't mean that you, who is, you know, you are a writer or you are a professional or you're a prolific blogger, whatever category you fall into, you are very likely not a professional cover designer, and you're not supposed to be. You are not expected to have the kind of graphic design skill, the kind of background, the kind of knowledge of the industry that it takes to create a truly professional cover design. So don't beat yourself up. I know, Denise, you have beaten yourself up over this before because you have so many skills in what you do, and I'm the same way. I feel like I should be able to do everything. And there are just things that we are not equipped to do, that we're not trained to do. And so don't feel bad about it. That's why cover designers are out there. They're there to build beautiful covers for you so that your readers see your book and they go, oh, my gosh, what is that? I want to see more of that. I want to look inside. I want to know what it's about. So cover design is extremely important. It is the first thing a reader sees. It's the first impression, and everybody knows how important first impressions are. So when you're thinking about a book, think about it as someone just walked into a room and saw you for the first time, and how you're dressed, how you're polished, how you come across, the tone of your voice, you know, all those things make a first impression. And with a book, it's a very static thing. It's just an image on a page. So, you know, the book can't say anything. It can't leap out and say, look at me, look at me. But it does that subliminally, really, through the imagery, through the typography, through the colors. So it's very important to achieve that. So the reason why I want to talk about cover design in particular to start out with, too, is because a lot of people don't really know, well, if I'm not supposed to do it myself, then who do I go and find, and how do I find these people, and what should I be looking for? So I wanted to just take a little bit of time to talk about cover design and to talk about where to go and find people online. There are lots of resources, and how you can determine if it's the right person for you. Because Denise, as you said, and I'm sure lots of people listening feel the same way, they don't even know what they should be looking for. They don't know what they should be asking. If somebody says, I'm a professional cover designer, you might just go, oh, okay, great. Well, this is what I have in mind, and that's it, without knowing what red flags you might want to be looking out for. So since you told me to just jump right in, unless you have a question, keep going. Okay. So what I want to tell you is, first of all, there are a couple different ways that you can approach cover design. One is to hire someone independent like me or many, many other independent cover designers. Some have worked for publishing houses. Some have, you know, extensive graphic design experience, and they've moved into book cover design the way I did. Or there are also some platforms such as 99designs.com, where a lot of times there are either new designers, either fresh out of school, who are trying to build a portfolio, and they will actually bid on your job by creating a cover based on criteria you give. So you have a title, a subtitle, maybe you let them know that you have a certain image or imagery in mind, give them some sort of ideas about color, that kind of thing. I've never commissioned a cover there before because I've never had a need to, but I do know that there is criteria that you give, and then lots and lots of designers basically vie to win the cover. I mean, they design a cover, and you get to see it, and you get to decide which one you want. So that basically what happens is you pay a fee. If you don't like any of the covers, you don't pay anything. So the downside is for the designers. I mean, they're working hard trying to build you a nice cover, a front cover at least to begin with. And you may not like it, and you may not choose it. But what it does give these designers is it helps them to build a portfolio. And many of these designers are actually quite talented. And I've seen, in the beginning, I wasn't seeing such great stuff coming out of there, so I wasn't initially promoting it. But now I'm seeing more and more good stuff coming out of it. And so I definitely wanted to talk about that because some people are a little gun-shy of that. But the bottom line is it's your decision. If you have covers that come in kind of like a contest, you can actually hold a contest. You can pick your favorites, and you can have a page where all your favorites are hosted, and you can invite your inner circle to vote and comment on why they gave it 5 stars or 2 stars or whatever. and help yourself decide, because deciding can be really difficult. So that's another way to go about it. The way I never want you to go about it is to go on one of these self-publishing platforms who has some sort of template. Please, please promise me you will never, ever, ever, raise your right hand right now, say, I promise I will never use a book cover template to design the cover for my book. Why? Because number one, there's not a whole lot of creativity that you can use in a template. But the biggest thing is that typography is a huge, huge part of cover design. Typography is an art. It's something that we typography nerds, we study, we understand. You know, just from, you know, being a person living in the world, that if you pick up a book or a flyer or you go on a website, you automatically get a feeling for content, for the author, for the event, whatever it is. There's a flavor that comes with the typography. And if you choose the wrong typography, if it's too whimsical, if it's too goofy, if it's too hard, it's too bold, too heavy, that conveys a feeling. And it's very important in book cover design that someone who understands the art of typography is working on your book. And again, that's not something that most people know. So when you go into a template, you know, you may have a list of fonts to pick from, and you're just typing in your information. And then maybe, you know, the author goes at the bottom and the title goes at the top, and ooh, maybe you can upload an image in the middle. Now, let's face it, you're never going to see a big or a small press book that looks like a template. Why? Because templates look amateurish. Those covers do not have the benefit of, you know, the art of typography, shadowing, different kinds of sizing, different kinds of effects, things that really make a cover pop and work. You don't have those kinds of choices when you're using a template. So if you go on Amazon and you punch in a keyword, and Denise, I know you have over 4,000 titles in your Kindle, and probably more now since we talked last.
I got 10 more yesterday.
See, I knew you would. But, you know, when you go in and you see covers, isn't it true that you know immediately if it's a DIY cover?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I can tell by the font. I can tell, you know, if the colors are just garish and nothing blends well. I can't even tell you how I know. I just instantly wince away from it. It's almost a visceral response. I just go, ah. And I will not buy the book. I won't even go see how many ratings it's got. I mean, if the cover makes me go, oh, I don't think so, I'm gone. I don't even wait to see what it's all about.
And I'm so glad you emphasized that, because as we've said time and time again, that first impression is everything. It's whether someone clicks on the book description or clicks to open the book or even moves on to look at anything else with regards to the book. I mean, it's very, very likely they're going to click the back button and move on. So it's interesting that you say you're not even sure why. You just know.
Yeah,
and
I can just see it.
You can see it. And that's because there are elements when you're a book designer, even if you're designing something with a lot of simplicity, simplicity can be just as hard and challenging as a really complex cover. And if you look at some covers that have been very successful and they're very simple, if you look at the typography, you'll understand the difference between punching in an Arial font or Verdana or any of these web-safe fonts that people use, you know, Times New Roman. You know, there's nothing wrong with these things for writing articles and things like that or writing a manuscript, but those aren't the fonts that you use when you design covers. They're certainly not the font you use to design interiors either. So, you know, when you're working off a template, you don't have those kinds of choices, and you don't have that kind of understanding of what you should be doing, and you're not working in a program where you can be doing that. So I'm so happy you said that, because some people don't know why it feels like they say a self-pub, but see, this is why I always feel bad about that, because self-publishing done right does not, quote, look self-published. It will look like it came from a press, and nobody will know the difference. But when you DIY it, like we talked about in, I think it was episode 2, when you DIY it, you have all the earmarks of a bad self-pub book, which is why self-publishing all along has had a bad rap and why it continues to be, you know, a little bit controversial at times, because there is no regulation. There's no board, you know, saying, okay, yes, this book passes inspection and this one does not. I mean, when you self-publish, it's up to you as the author to ensure that it's professional from cover to cover. So if you're using a template and you're winging it with your interior, you're really selling your book short, and ultimately you're just turning a reader away before they even have a chance to know what your book is about, and you don't want to do that.
No, and not only that, Stacey, not everybody has a good graphic eye.
No,
I mean, honestly,
they don't.
Yeah, I don't like to work in graphics. It's not my strength, and I'm smart enough to know that. I'm very creative, and I'm very techie. You hand me an infographic, and I'm like, oh, that's fantastic. The minute I go try to do something like it, my brain just freezes. My brain doesn't function that way. I know what I like. I know what really attracts me. I know what repels me, but I can't duplicate their work. It just is not what I do. Now, you ask me about colors and hues and tones. I'm there. I'm all over that. But as far as the graphics go, I'm the last person you want to ask to do graphics. I have a great team for that because I know where my strengths are. But a lot of people, they'll say, okay, you know, I can do this on my own. And they'll hand me something, and I'm just telling them, I'm not putting that on the website. I will flat refuse to sully the website with that. I won't do it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because there are a lot of people who think they can put things together for themselves
and they can't.
Save money. And yeah. It's understandable that people want to save money.
Sure.
Because all of the stuff is
yeah.
expensive. I totally get it. But the thing is that impression, that first impression,
right.
If you have a cheesy-looking one sheet, a cheesy-looking book cover,
yeah.
I mean, you might as well hang it up. No one is going to see you as credible as an author or a speaker or whatever it is you're trying to do. So that's a really important point. I just want to emphasize again, you're not expected to be a professional graphic designer. You're not expected to be versed in the conventions of interior layout, of cover design. You're not expected to be any of those things. Those are all arts. Those are things that we train for, that we do a lot of study, and we do a lot of trial and error, and we figure things out. You know, it is a skill. So don't feel bad if you're a writer and, oh, my gosh, I'm also, you know, supposed to be a cover designer, an interior layout artist, blah, 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 and you're thinking, but I don't know how to do that. Well, you're not supposed to know how to do that. It's okay. But what you are supposed to know is how to hire the people who are professionals who will make your book shine. Because let's face it, nobody should be publishing a book that's substandard. It does nothing for you as an author. It does nothing for the literary community, and it certainly turns off readers. So really, what is the point? So that's why we're talking about
yes.
who you want to be looking for.
We've had that discussion several times. You know, if you publish something that's substandard, you really lose credibility. You just do. If it's full of grammatical errors, run-on sentences, poor punctuation, yeah, if the book cover is great, and I've seen this, Stacey, I'll get a book and, oh, man, it looks like it's really interesting. And, you know, the book cover is good. Everything gets my attention, and I open it, and four paragraphs in, I'm wincing. And then if I get to the fourth or fifth page and I'm still mentally correcting their grammar or putting punctuation in the proper spot, I'm gone. I will not continue. It wears me out. It wears my brain out.
Yes, so, and everyone listening who hasn't heard episode 4 from a couple weeks ago, make sure you don't miss that, because we talk all about editors and what to look for with editors and why there are different types of editors, what they do, what you need to be looking for, red flags to heed, questions to ask, all that good stuff, because, again, you can only self-edit to a point. Yes, you should self-edit, but you can only do it to a point. Then you absolutely have to turn it over to a professional, and maybe, you know, more than one, depending on what that editor actually has skills in. So I don't want to digress too much back into editing, or we'll never get through our short show today, which happens to us frequently. So what I want to do is just kind of circle back to cover design. We talked about typography. We talked about the importance of color. Another thing to think about is certain genres have certain sort of expectations. Now, when I say that, I mean, if you look at, say, mystery novels, like kind of hardcore mystery, you see a lot of primary colors. You see bold sans serif fonts for author names and title names. You see an image that covers the entire cover, especially when there are a series of books, and that happens many times in mystery. You know, every cover will look very similar. The typography matches, but the color scheme is different, or the photo obviously is different. But there's a feeling, there's a certain expectation the reader has of that kind of mystery. If you switch over to what are called cozies, you know, where they're not gruesome and gory and they're not, you know, really heavy and dark, then, you know, you might see a teddy bear on the cover, or you might see something whimsical as a photograph on the cover, and the font may be a little bit more fun, because that gives you the flavor of the story. And the same thing happens with nonfiction when you're looking at certain genres, like certain business books. You know, a lot of times you'll see red. Red is a very power color. Red, black, blue, certain colors like that come up a lot. But then, you know, it really depends on what is reflecting your particular book. So what I want to emphasize here is that when someone is going to design your cover, now let's just say that you're working with a team of people. So you have an editor over here, a copy editor over there, and then you hire a cover designer. That person doesn't have the benefit of having already edited your book or been in your book. So it's very important that that person is either willing to, you know, read your book to some degree, but you should be prepared to pay them for their time to do that. So that can be a little tricky. Or you need to make sure that you have a consultation by phone. I think by phone is very important because voices are very important in conveying, you know, enthusiasm, understanding, knowledge, things like that. You can tell with a voice. You can't always tell in an email. If that person really understands what your genre is about and what your particular book is about. So book designers, like editors, will have certain specialties. So some book designers may do really awesome business books and maybe some really awesome parenting books, but isn't really good with fiction or women's fiction or the genre fiction in general. Some people may be really great with fiction, but they don't really love doing nonfiction. I would say that most cover designers probably, you know, have a pretty wide range of skill. But again, there are so many book genres, and different genres have different feelings and different expectations. It doesn't mean that they should fit into a mold. I'm not saying that. But to a degree, sometimes there are expectations that need to be met. And the person designing your book needs to understand exactly who your audience is, exactly who you're targeting, and exactly what your book is about and the tone of your book and the benefits of your book. So you need to be sure that you can convey all of that to the potential cover designer and that that person understands exactly what to create, at least for some concepts for you to play with. I know for me as a cover designer, I have quite an extensive phone conversation about the cover, asking for the author's input. So I'm going to toss this out so that you can think about this too when you are talking to cover designers. I always ask questions like, do you have a photograph that you definitely want on the cover for a specific reason? Does it actually work for your cover? Does it actually draw your audience? If I see the image and I think, this doesn't really feel right to me, maybe we can do something similar, or maybe there are several photographs to pick from and, you know, one of them works really, really well. What colors do you imagine if you think of your book on a bookshelf, do you always imagine certain colors and why? There's a whole psychology to colors, too. Certain colors convey certain tones, certain feelings. And so your book needs to, you know, be able to embrace that. Now, that doesn't mean that there's one perfect color scheme for your book. There may be 20 different color schemes that work for your book. But the point is that you don't use any that don't work. That's very important. I also ask about, you know, are there other books either in your genre or close to it that you really, really love and why? And are there books you really don't like and why? And those are questions that really help me as a cover designer because I can see exactly what the author doesn't like, which is very helpful. But I can also look at why they're drawn to certain books. And if they're the author of this particular material, then their reader is probably going to be very similar. When we're talking about nonfiction, and we're talking about, you know, maybe a certain niche market, if the author is drawn to certain types of covers, the reader probably will be too, but not always. Again, sometimes the author has an idea of something he or she wants, and in reality, it's terrible. I actually had an author very enthusiastically say, and I've already designed a cover, but I want you to look at it, and then maybe you can just tweak it a little. And it was just terrible. I mean, it had this photograph, and then it had this cartoon image embedded on top of it, and it was all wrong. And it was very difficult to try to explain to the author why it wasn't working. But again, art, any kind of art, and cover design is no exception, is subjective. It certainly is subjective. So, you know, the important thing to remember is that there are, you know, thousands of ways a cover artist can approach your cover. There are just so many ways you can put together, you know, the title, the subtitle, the imagery, the author name, whatever else is going to go on that cover. And so, you know, there's not one perfect cover that's always going to come out of the mix right away. I mean, a lot of times it takes several concepts to get to that point. But for you as a writer, you want to be really clear on as much as you possibly can to give the cover artist some guidance. And if you're particular perspective on your cover is a little skewed, then hopefully that cover artist who has experience in the industry is going to come in and say, okay, look, for your particular audience, I think you're going to be better off with this kind of an image or this kind of a color scheme, and this is why. So these are the kinds of questions you want to be asking. You know, how do you arrive at the first cover concept? How do you come up with what you come up with? And how do you know what to look for as far as what my audience will be drawn to? What kinds of clues or what kind of experience do you use to arrive at that? Don't be afraid to ask somebody you're going to hire and pay good money to these kinds of questions. I would never be offended if somebody asked me these kinds of questions. So, you know, you want to make sure that your baby is in good hands. And so, you know, ruling out certain people because something just doesn't jive is really a good idea. You definitely want to work with someone who isn't just a graphic designer but has done book covers and has a portfolio. So even if someone is just starting out, you know, if they've only done a couple covers but those covers look pretty awesome and then they have other graphic design work they've done, maybe they've worked on websites or they've done other kinds of flyers or, you know, any kind of graphic work, and you see, oh, wow, this person really has talent, then, you know, I'm not saying eliminate that person because he or she doesn't have a huge portfolio. Everybody has to start somewhere. And that's why 99 Designs has been really great for people starting out because they can build a portfolio. Even if their design doesn't get chosen, they're still, you know, creating a design that's a good and viable option for the author. So those are some things that you want to look for. The other thing I just want to caution you on is if you find someone who offers you just a low, flat fee, that always scares me. If they say, oh, yeah, I'll do your cover for $200. Okay, well, what exactly does that mean? How many concepts are you going to do for me for that $200? Does that mean you're also going to design the full cover layout? If you're doing a print book, and everybody really should be doing a print book and an ebook, then, you know, they may say, oh, well, a full cover layout, now that's a different story. Or, oh, well, if you want more than one concept, it's going to be a lot more. So just be really careful about those low one-time set fees. I charge by the hour. My clients know that I take as much information as I possibly can. I ask for a lot from my authors before I even begin to create a concept. So that first concept is really well thought out. It's well researched. It's, you know, using all of the information the author's given me. It's using research that I've done in their niche market. So that first concept should be, you know, maybe not the perfect one quite yet, But I don't want people paying me hour after hour just because I keep coming up with bad concepts. I mean, I would never want that. I always try to do really, really well on the first one. And sometimes it's just, you know, tweaking and a variation of that first one until we come up with what we love. And sometimes it's something completely different. It just depends. But, again, just be sure you ask. If there's a flat fee, what exactly does that mean? How many changes? How many concepts? Is it just a front cover or is it a full cover layout? And make sure you see at least some covers, fronts and full covers that that person has done. If somebody's truly a professional cover artist, they should have a portfolio online you can see. So don't hire somebody without seeing any samples whatsoever. And if you're looking for someone who, or you end up finding someone or a group of people who charge by the hour, $50 to $75 is kind of that sweet range. That's typically what you'll find, so keep that in mind. Some people who are really, really advanced graphic designers and done lots and lots and lots of covers, they may charge up to $100 or $125 an hour. So just depending on your budget and what you're looking for, and especially looking for has that person done anything in your genre that you like or covers that you actually do like or are drawn to. So those are all important things when you're looking for a cover artist.
Well, you've covered a couple of very important things, and to me, I would rather pay the higher rate. I really would, because I know that they know what they're doing, they can get in and out quickly, but I would also have a checklist of things that I wanted to ask them and things that I wanted answered. It seems to me that you have something like this on your website somewhere as kind of a, or you will have. It seems like we've talked about this. Maybe it's in your upcoming product, but it seems to me that you've got somewhere that people can go to find the questions that they need to ask.
Actually, I have a couple of blog posts. One of them,
okay,
I believe, is one of the graphics that's on the screen, which if you're not listening live, you won't see that graphic. But if you go to my blog, theselfpublishingscoop.com, and you go to the archive, let me double-check and see where it is. If you go back to May of 2013, you will find an article called Shine with Stellar Book Cover Design, and that has a lot of information. And then also in that same month, there's another article called Be Smart, Not Taken, Red Flags to Heed When Seeking Book Production Professionals. And there is a section on editing, on book design, interior layout with red flags and questions and things you should be looking for. So those two blog posts are pretty chock full. If you're looking for information about covers, you'll find all kinds of information there. So again,
I knew it was there. I just wasn't sure where. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, selfpublishingscoop.com, May 2013 archive. There are just two articles in May, and those are the two that you would want to check out.
Excellent.
And
okay, I don't want to interrupt, so keep on going.
You're fine. I just want to toss out one more thing that I want you to be aware of. If you work with a company who offers cover design as part of a package, I'm not really a fan of working with self-publishing platforms who offer packages. We talked at length about this. Gosh, we've had all these episodes, and I'm not sure which one it was. I think it was in number one or two. So please do go back and listen if you haven't, because I really give a lot of important advice for you, as I don't want you to fall into any traps and become a horror story, because a lot of people have. But most of the time, those package deals that sound and look really tidy and wonderful are not at all. But if you happen to feel that you found a platform who offers cover design and you feel really good about it and you've asked all the questions you need to ask, again, I don't really recommend this. But if you do, you have to remember that company owns your cover design, not you. So if you publish with a company and then later on you say, oh, I really want to switch over to Ingram now, I wish I'd done Ingram in the first place, I'll just take my manuscript and, you know, my interior layout they did and my cover design that they did that I paid for, and I'll just move over to another platform. Well, guess what? You can't. They own the rights to that cover that they designed even though you paid for it, and they also own the rights to your interior layout. So you would have to pay to have that done all over again. So, again, when you hire an independent, make sure that your contract states that the rights belong to the author. Once, for example, in my contract it says once I've been paid for the cover design and for the interior layout, it belongs to the author, period. And all the files go to the author when we're done, and I keep them all on a backup in case they ever need them or need to make changes. Of course, I take care of them. But that's a very important thing for you to know, because you don't want to be out money and then find out, oh, my gosh, I have to pay to have this done all over again. So just a word of advice there.
Excellent. And that would be heartbreaking. And I know it happens all the time. And frankly, I think it's a very poor bit way to do business. But it seems to be the norm. And I think it's wrong, but there it is. So you just have to be very aware.
You do. You do. And unfortunately, as I've mentioned before, there are so many horror stories coming out of these companies making, you know, making these packages look so wonderful to authors who have a dream they want to fulfill. And unfortunately, they don't care a lick about your dream. They don't care about your being a published author with excellence. They care about making money. That's it. They don't vet the manuscripts. They don't, you know, they'll take anything. They usually outsource to people overseas who either, you know, English isn't their first language. They're not necessarily professionals. They don't know the conventions of either book design or editing or, you know, whatever. They're just more and more horror stories pouring out because these companies target writers. They know that they have a dream they want to fulfill. They know they're overwhelmed, and they know that offering some neat and tidy little deal is going to make it very easy for an author to say, yes, let me do that. And in reality, typically, you're not getting what you're paying for, and you're going to end up very unhappy in the end. Now, you know, occasionally it works out. You know, here and there I've heard somebody say, oh, yeah, well, you know, I think CreateSpace did a good job with my editing. But quite frankly, a lot of authors don't even realize if they've been edited well or not because they don't have the editing skills themselves. And I found this, that this has happened to me several times with authors coming to me saying, oh, well, my book's already been professionally edited, so I only need, you know, design, whatever. And then I start, you know, either the layout process or I'm maybe hired as the proofreader, and I see error after error after error. And the author doesn't even know their mistakes because not every author is really good at copy editing, and that's okay. Again, you may be a great storyteller. You may be great in your business with super ideas to share, but you may not really be that great at writing as a skill, as an art. Again, that's why editors exist. That's why designers exist, to take care of you and make your book shine. So I digress, but I digress because I'm so worried about people falling for these schemes that I kind of want to bring it up in every show just in case someone only listens to one show. I want to be sure that you're aware that those are traps and don't want you to fall into them.
And it's important that people know this because there's so many things that can go wrong. I mean, if you fall into one of these, I'm just going to call it you going down the well, there are so many things that you can do. You have choices. Do I just say, oh, heck with it, I give up? Do you try to, you know, solve it legally? I mean, what do you do? It seems to me that it takes a very... To me, writing a book is kind of a gut-wrenching thing. I've been trying to, and it's like pulling it out of the bottom of my tummy. I mean, and I'll
I
get
know.
It done. I will, but it's just gut-wrenching. And it just seems to me, Stacey, that if you get through all of this and you think, okay, I've got it, I've got it, I've got a book cover, it's edited, it's ready to go, and then you find out it's not really edited, the book cover sucks, you don't own the book cover. So what do people just give up sometimes, or do they get mad and say, I'll fix it, or do they just do both? I mean, it seems to me that it would be very easy for people to go, oh, I'm done. I'm not doing any more of this. This is ridiculous. I took a scrunching, and I'm done. And I hate to see that happen.
Well, I do too, and I've seen it happen far too many times. It breaks my heart every single time. Some of those people have come to me to redo their book completely, and yes, of course, they need to pay me to do that. And I hate to see someone put money out and be taken and then have to turn around and put more money out. It's wrong. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It's wrong to take advantage of people. But no matter what industry you're in, people will find a way to do that. And it's just sickening. So Yes, some people say, you know, I saved that $5,000. It took me a long time to save that. It was a huge sacrifice for me to put that $5,000 into my book. I don't have any more money to have it redone. I'm just going to have to put it out the way it is. I mean, I've come this far. I might as well just put it out. And the sad thing is again, your credibility is on the line. The impression may be a bad one, or maybe the cover is actually great, but then once the customer walks into the house, like I talked about last time, that pretty house on the outside looks like a, you know, a house from Hoarders on the inside. You know, bad editing, bad punctuation, all that kind of stuff, the author or the reader is going to give up, like you have so many times. So, you know, you don't want to do that. I would say, If you do fall into one of those traps and your money gets wasted, God forbid you put out a substandard book because it won't help you at all, I would say if you can, you know, save up again and hold off and get it done right, you know, that's important. But again, you want to be really sure that you have somebody credible and who's going to take good care of you. So it's rough. I there's no perfect solution. The best I can do is give you as many questions to ask as possible so that you can weed out the bad people, you can get, you know, the good vibe, bad vibe thing figured out, and you can see examples, you can, you know, have conversation that really helps you know if it's the right match for you. So that's what I'm trying to do partly with this series, is to give you as many questions and guidelines and red flags as it possibly can, especially in this episode and the one prior, so that you can find the best people for you.
And one of the reasons I so appreciate you taking this much time, and I know I've mentioned this before, I've never done a series on this particular radio show, but when we had that first episode, I kept saying, oh my gosh, there's just so much more to know. There was no way that we could cover all of the wisdom that you have and all of the knowledge that you've gained and the training that you've gained in 1 hour episode. It just didn't seem quite fair. So when I asked you to come back and you said yes, I went, oh, thank goodness, because, look, everywhere you look these days, I mean, I spend a lot of time on the Internet. It's mine. I own it. I just share it with y'all. But the Internet was made for me, just so y'all know.
And yes,
the
we
thing
do
is,
know.
You do know. I'm very clear about that. I'll share it, but you play nice.
Yes, yes.
But the thing is, I spend a lot of time on the Internet, and I'm always researching my own topics, my own industries. I need to know what's going on, you know, what's good, what's bad, what's new, what's kind of fading away. I have to self-educate every day. And the one thing that I see consistently, and I mean consistently, every single day, and I actually started tracking it to see if it was just me thinking, oh, I'm seeing that a lot. No, I'm seeing it daily, and that's the advent of publishing. People want to become a Kindle author. They want to sell books. You know, they want to have books that they can give away or sell at the back of the room at their, you know, when they're speaking. There are so many reasons why people want to become authors right now. Credibility, to actually share their story, to help people, whatever the reasons are. And you cannot open up your email or go on Facebook or LinkedIn and not see something to do with Kindle publishing or do-it-yourself publishing or write a book in a week, which I think is ridiculous, but because I've tried it, it doesn't work. I mean, I sat down and went, I tried it, I did. You know, I set myself a challenge and it didn't work. But anyway, I mean, we're inundated with book. You have to write a book. I agree. If you want to write a book, you should. But when you said, yes, I'll keep coming back until we get this out, I was so grateful because there are so many pitfalls, so many. And like you said earlier, I have something like 4,000 books on my Kindle. And some I will read from the beginning to the very end. They really grab me and they pull me in. And others, because of the grammar or the typos, I may still be interested in them, but I'm losing focus because my brain just functions that way. So I'll kind of skip, you know, I'll grab that little slide at the bottom of my iPad and I'll slide till I find something else that gets, and honestly, I may only read an eighth of the book, but I got what I wanted out of it. And that's not why authors write. They want to pull you in. They want you to really understand and delve into the whole story, whatever it is. And I'm finding with more and more and more of these books that I'm getting on Kindle, too many of them are just not readable. And I find that incredibly sad. And now
it
I know why. I didn't know why they weren't readable. I just knew that they had typos. You know, I just knew that maybe the story would get lost. I don't read a whole lot of fiction, but when I do, I would like for it to really entertain me. You know, if I have the fire lit and a cup of, you know, cocoa or something, and I would like to be really drawn into the story. And if I'm just sliding forward, it used to be we turn pages, now we slide the slider. But if I'm just going, aha, okay, the story just got lost there somewhere, and I have to go pick and choose what I want to read in the book, it's a disservice to the author, but the author did a disservice by publishing it. And I didn't know that until we started talking. I just knew
I'm
I didn't
so
like the darn book.
That Yes, it's such an important point to talk about because, as I mentioned in other shows, that your why for writing a book is extremely important. It drives everything about the book. If your why is self-centered only, your book will probably end up cutting corners, getting up there because you just want to be a published author. You just want to put author after your name on social media, on your email signature. You want to say you're published. Maybe you're doing a print book version, so you want to have that to sell in the back of the room. But guess what? If you're not looking at audience-centered reasons for writing and looking at it as a publisher and not just as a writer, you are going to almost always make the kinds of missteps that kill your credibility. And once you kill the credibility with the first bad version, it's really hard to recoup it. I mean, you can have the book redone the right way, but guess what? That bad book is going to be stuck on Amazon for all eternity. It is, like, impossible to get a book off Amazon once it's there. So just I just don't want to see people make those kinds of mistakes because, you know, self-publishing, ooh, I can do it all myself. Wrong. You cannot do it all yourself. You can't. Even I, who am a professional editor, cover designer, layout artist, proofreader, even I have a professional editor for my fiction because I am not equipped to be that kind of editor for myself. I'm too close to my own material. I've been looking at it too long. I've been coddling my characters for too long. There is no way I would never publish without a professional editor. I mean, yes, I can, you know, create a beautiful layout for myself. I'm not, you know, maybe I'll do my own cover. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'm too close to my own book for that too. I don't know. But the bottom line is I want to say that because I want people to understand. Even someone like me who does happen to have all of these skills, I'm still looking at professionals. At least the professional editor is a must for me.
And that makes perfect sense. But listen, some of these books honestly just break my heart because you can tell. I mean, when you open a book and you can tell when it's somebody's really in it, their heart is in it. So you can just tell if you read like I do. You can tell when it was kind of a sketchy thing, well, I'm going to throw this out. And, you know, hopefully all 28 pages of it might have a nugget in there or two. Those books, I just go, and I delete them from my Kindle. I'll look at them, but I'm not going to get caught up in them. And other books that, I mean, when I know the author is in there, I get very engaged. And I'm rooting for them. I want them to succeed. And when I come across, I was reading a book this weekend. It was actually a work of fiction, which I don't read a whole lot of, but this one was just fascinating, beautifully written. But every once in a while, I would come across, you know, this is a pet peeve of mine. Advice is A-D-V-I-C-E, not S-E. Drives me crazy. And
me
it
too.
Was in there a couple of times, and, you know, where was improperly used. But I would have to stop and go, calm down. The book is so engaging and so well crafted that, you know, I'm going to tell my brain to kind of skip over these. But here's my question, Stacey, and I will not go on Amazon and write a scathing review of somebody's book because it might have been well written, but the typos were there. I'm not going to do it. For starters, that makes me look really crummy. I would rather contact them directly if I could and say, look, your book was fantastic, but this is where I saw issues. You know, I would love to give you a great review, but I can't, but I'm also not going to give you a crummy review. What happens with these books? I mean, do people, look, I've read some rotten reviews, and people just get nasty behind their keyboards, and I don't think they should do that.
Well, I'm not a fan of nastiness, period.
No.
I think that what you're talking about is a wonderful way to go about it, which is, you care about the author and what they're saying to the reader in a book. And so to contact that person directly is a really classy thing to do, to at least start with saying, I loved your book, the story grabbed me, I loved this character, whatever, and say, but I'm writing to you not only to praise you for the story, but because I found some things that did, you know, make me wonder if you'd had a professional editor for the book, or you know, that made me kind of question, you know, your credibility here and there, and I certainly wouldn't want anybody else to experience that. So, you know, may I make a suggestion, or, you know, may I point a few things out to you? I think that, you know, unless somebody is just a total egomaniac and is on the defensive no matter what, I think that person would appreciate knowing that, I didn't know. I know that I would. I mean, I don't think anybody publishes a book that hasn't had, you know, at least some degree of commitment. I mean, yes, there are programs, write a book in a day, write a book in a weekend, and I'm always suspicious of those kinds of things myself. But even if you, you know, get the book plotted out or out as a rough draft in a weekend, it's still going to have to undergo a lot of rewrites. It's going to have to undergo design. I mean, if you're doing an ebook, you know, there's still some design involved. It's not as involved as doing a print book, but you still need to make sure that the book is going to read well on all the different e-reader devices, so that's important. But, you know, just plopping a book up there without having any thought, I mean, I think it's very kind of someone to say, hey, you know, your book has promise, but I would really recommend you have a professional editor go through it, you know, pull it, have an editor go through it, and then, you know, maybe republish it when it's ready, really ready for the world. At the same time, I kind of think that if people really think they can throw a book up there that they threw together in a couple days and didn't pay any attention to it, they kind of get, I hate to say what they deserve, because that's not really how I am, but you know what I mean? You get what you deserve.
I do. It's like
that sounds really harsh.
Right.
But, you know, you do have to, you have to think about it. I mean, no publishing house is going to throw a book up that wasn't edited or well-designed. They're never, ever going to do that. So why would you do that to yourself as a self-publishing author? It just makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
No, it really doesn't. And let's face it, right. And Amazon is the biggest seller of everything practically in the world. I mean, I've always said the minute I can get them to deliver fresh crawfish and romaine lettuce to my house, I'm done. My car is being sold. I'll never come out again. But the thing is, Amazon is huge. And if you're getting consistently lousy reviews that are targeting your grammar, I never see it about the book cover. That just doesn't seem to pop into people's heads. But the biggest gripe you'll see is, like, number one that I'm seeing is really lousy grammar, add-on sentences didn't flow. Mostly it's just the punctuation. And then the second gripe I see after that is, well, the story just broke down in the middle. What happened? So those are two biggies. But you start getting those, that book is dead. Nobody is going to download it. And they're not going to go get your next book. Even if it's free, you're done. You're toast.
Well, yes, because the expectation has already been set. There's already a
low bar. Right.
And so a reader is going to assume that the bar didn't get any higher for book two, unfortunately. That's why when you put out that first book, you want to save up for the investment it deserves. You really have to do that. If you want to have any kind of a good reputation in your field as a professional, as a prolific blogger, as a novelist, whatever it is you're writing, that first book, it sets the standard for all books that are going to come after it. Somebody might give you a second chance if the book, you know, had a few problems. They might give you a second chance on book two. But if you're really putting out a mess and thinking people are going to come back for more, you've got to be out of your mind. I know that sounds harsh, but face it, that makes absolutely no sense.
It is the truth.
So,
can you believe this? We have 50 seconds. Is there anything that I hope I tried not to interrupt you, but I did it anyway. I'm sorry. Is there anything? Is there anything that you really needed to get in before the show ends? No, we're still recording. We just won't be streaming live in about 35 seconds.
Yes. Well, once again, we only got half of our topic covered because we didn't get to talk about interior layout. And
okay.
I do want to give really, really important points about that maybe in another episode. Do I dare
Absolutely.
Even ask you?
Are you kidding? At this point, if you say, no, I can't come back, I'll have to hunt you down.
Well, let me tell you right now, I will never not come back. If you invite me back, I will always come back. So I
Definitely,
do want to
we need six.
Okay, so we will do that. Before we go, though, I would like to just, we do have the master do's and don'ts list that I created for your audience. It is available for download on the main page. And the updated version, which you should have, has some great resources at the end of it. They're all hot links, so you can go right to the site. So I won't bother to try to list them on the air right now, but if you want to grab that master do's and don'ts list, I would be very happy for you to have it. And there are some really great resources looking for editors, for layout artists and cover designers, and then also, you know, if beyond the book where you're looking at web design and all that, of course, Denise is fabulous for all of that. So I get to plug you on your show because it's not you plugging yourself.
Right. I saw that on the list. I went, woohoo. I made the
Yeah,
list.
Woohoo. Yes. Oh, absolutely. So, yes, I would definitely like to talk about interior layout because, again, I've seen so many books with so much promise and such great content just be killed because the author said, oh, I can do this in Word all by myself. Guess what? No.
I know.
You can't.
I know.
You shouldn't. And I want to explain why, and I want to tell you what to look for when you're looking for a professional, or if you absolutely can't afford a professional and you want to figure out how to do it yourself, I'm going to talk about the kinds of programs you need to master and lots and lots and lots of conventions and technicalities you need to understand. Otherwise, you are going to break rules, and you are going to show your reader that you didn't really know what you were doing. And overall, the reader might not know precisely why it's weird, but they'll sense it because there are many conventions in book design.
Right.
So if you open up a book and the table of contents starts on the left-facing page, something in you, because you've read hundreds of books over your lifetime, is going to think, this is odd. Why? Because the table of contents always begins on a right-facing page. The first chapter always begins on a right-facing page. You know, there are all these rules. And you probably don't know that because you've just been reading and you think, oh, yeah. But even if you just pick up a book and you flip through, you'll see that certain things are always done. And other things, you know, you can kind of play with. There are different things you can play with. So I do want to talk about that so that you know what to be looking for when you're looking to hire somebody. And also, you know, I don't recommend you do it yourself, but if you're going to try to do it yourself, then I at least want you to know some really important things not to do and to do so that you can have the best possible presentation.
Excellent. Well, listen, before we end the show, please tell people where they can find you on the web.
Oh, yes. I'd love for you to come visit me at thebookdoctorisin.com. That's all one word, thebookdoctorisin.com. And as I already mentioned, I have my blog as well, which is theselfpublishingscoop.com. And please make sure you get that master do's and don'ts list that I made for all of you. It's a lot of tips, a lot of links to other articles and information for you there. And I'm hoping that it'll be a really good little guidebook for you to be able to, you know, kind of figure out at least either where to get started or what to look for so that you don't fall into any traps. I don't want anybody listening to this show to fall into any traps, so that's very important to me.
Excellent. Okay, now, I have one more request of you there. Where can they find the books that we spoke of at the top of the show, the two that you published this week?
Oh, yes, they are both available on Amazon.com, so Until the Brighter Tomorrow and Three Miracles and a Near-Death Experience, which just as a side note is not a heavily religious slant. It doesn't matter what your faith is or even if you're agnostic or whatever it is. It's a really wonderful read about this charming, charming man who I adore. In his story and his spiritual journey, it's just very touching, no matter what your faith is. But they're both available on Amazon and in paperback and in ebook. And I really appreciate you letting me toss those titles out because, as I said, I'm really excited about these books and so excited for the authors.
Well, if you worked on them, I know they're worth reading, so I have no compunction at all in doing that.
Oh, thank you so much.
I trust you, and I trust your authors. So. Well, listen, everybody, Stacey, you have been amazingly gracious with your time and with your tips and your wisdom and your advice. I can't even begin to tell you how much I appreciate that. I mean, it's just been, you've been astonishing.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm so grateful to be asked to come back again and again, truly. So thank you.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely we have to get to episode 6. I'll send you my calendar. And thank you.
Okay.
I wish I could tell you how much I appreciate it. I just don't have the words.
Well, you know what? I already feel that, and I know it just from what you've said, and I know everything you say is heartfelt. So believe me, the privilege is mine, the pleasure is mine, it's mutually beneficial, and the most important thing is that the listeners get a lot of great advice and knowledge out of it. So if we've accomplished that as a team, that's what makes me really happy.
Oh, it's been accomplished, no question about it. Well, listen, thank you, everyone, for being with us here today. The show will be available for download in about an hour, and be sure to go back and listen to episodes 1 through 4. Listen to this one, and then stay tuned for episode 6. We are going to really make sure that you've got the information you need to make an informed decision about your book. Your book comes from your heart. It comes from your gut. We want you to make it something that you can share with the world with pride and dignity, and that's really the whole focus of this show. So go ahead and look for us in iTunes. Type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Stacey Aronson, and I will see you next week. Stacey, thank you.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.